This is the Mobile Tech Podcast, brought to you by worldpodcasts.com. Now here's your host, Tech Girl Miriam Joie.
Brought to you by Mint Mobile. Stay tuned for a special offer at the end of the show. Hi, and welcome to the Mobile Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Miriam Joie, and today is Thursday, August 10th, 2023, and Nick Gray of Fandroid joins me again. Thanks, Nick. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on again.
You know, it's always great to have you on, but usually we're like in some hotel room at MWC or IFA or something, or CES even. You're kind of like my go-to on-site guest lately. And so I'm glad we're actually doing like a proper former recording. Look at that. Like we're like good quality video and great audio and the whole shebang.
Doing it right.
Exactly. So listen, I don't know about you, but my Z Flip 5 and Z Fold 5 review is imminent. I think by the time this podcast gets published, they'll be up on Hot Hardware. You did a really interesting comparison video between the Z Flip 5 and the Razer Plus 2023. And so I thought we'd spend a bit of time first before we jump into a whole bunch of news talking about, you know, the cameras and maybe comparing them to the competition, which directly would be, you know, for the Fold, it'd be the Pixel Fold, and for the Flip, what you did, right? So I'm kind of curious because I haven't actually watched your video, and I want to know if your takeaway is the same as my empirical takeaway after just, I didn't do a formal comparison. I just kind of like use the Razer a lot, use the Flip a lot, same photos, same conditions at different times. And I have some thoughts. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right.
So, yeah, as I do with all of my smartphone camera comparisons that I put up on YouTube, I go out and take 80 to 100 side-by-side photos and probably about 20 or so side-by-side videos with all the cameras, front, rear, ultra-wide, and, you know, just give you an idea of what the day-to-day shooting conditions are, you know, in different lighting scenarios and, you know, especially against sun, not against the sun, in shadows, things like that. And putting these two phones side by side, and you would think based off of the specs, you know, they both have technically low resolution sensors for those outside cameras, just so that they can have better or larger pixels for better light absorption. And the results generally look okay when you look at each of them individually, but when you start putting them side by side, you can see a clear difference between Motorola and Samsung. And a lot of people, even me, I gave Motorola props with my Razer Plus review because it's probably one of the better cameras that Motorola has released in a very, very long time. But this comparison just shows how far behind Motorola actually is in comparison to a market leader in the segment. And, you know, as much as I wanted the Motorola device to shine, it definitely did not in this comparison.
What was the worst aspect? Like, if you had to pick one thing you think that really the Z Flip 5 just obliterates it, like just wins.
Z Flip 5, the selfie camera on the inside is head and shoulders better than what Motorola is doing for its selfie camera. Motorola actually went the opposite way of Samsung. Samsung has, I think, an 8-megapixel sensor for the selfie camera.
It's a 10,
Or the 10. And then Motorola has a 32-megapixel selfie
camera.
And they
pixel bin,
That's pixel bin, And it's one of those things where you're like, okay, so I don't know, maybe Moto should have an advantage here because they're doing the fancy pixel binning and everything for these shots, but it's definitely not, especially in low light situations, but also just the size of the sensor itself. You can actually tell that it's a smaller sensor in comparison to what Samsung is using, just because, you know, that natural depth of field that you get with the bokeh. And it's, I don't know, it just bugs me when you're paying $999 for technically a flagship tier device, even though, you know, there's some caveats there with these flip phones and, you know, Motorola as well using an older chipset. But I don't know, I was expecting a lot more out of Motorola on its own. If you're just using this device and don't have a real comparison, you'd probably be happy with it. But if you're the type of person who likes to shop around and look at comparisons, you're definitely not going to be happy when you see that Samsung's photos are just so much better.
But that's the selfie inner camera. Well, Not too many people are using that, right? On a flip phone? You're going to use the cover.
Correct. I mean, so this is the caveat here of this is a flip device, which means you get the cover display. And both of these phones have a much larger cover display, which makes it even easier to use the outside cameras. I don't know why, though. People still use that inside selfie camera when they're doing video calls, when they're taking selfies to put on Instagram, stuff like that. I see people with their flip devices using that selfie camera. And I'm like, guys, just use the outside one. I mean, granted, it's while the cover display makes it easier to use, it's still not incredibly easy to use the outside camera if you're not used to it. People like us who have used a dozen or so flip devices at this point, you know, over the last couple of years, we're very attuned to what the experience should be. And on these devices, it's actually much easier than a lot of competing devices with the smaller displays. So it's easy for us to do it. But if you're somebody who typically has, you know, a regular Samsung device and you go and move to this device and photography isn't your number one priority, because nobody's going to be buying this phone for its photography prowess. Like if you want a Samsung phone that takes great pictures, you're going to buy the Galaxy S23 Ultra, right? Like that's the phone you're going to buy. So it's mainly people who have a smartphone who are casual photographers. I wouldn't expect them to know the intricacies of, hey, I can actually use the cover display and these are the settings that I need to change in order to make it work properly, things like that. It maybe after 6 months they'll get used to it, but day one, they're definitely not doing that.
Yeah, no, I think old habits die hard. That's what the reality is. Even though, technically speaking, all you have to do is double tap the power button with the phone closed and you have the camera.
And technically, most people still don't know that, though.
Then there's cropping settings and a whole bunch of things you're teaching throughout. You know, the Z Flip 5 by default does 1x1 photos when you use the cover display, unless you change it in the settings. The Moto does, I think, the same.
Yeah, you're left with square images and square video as well, which is completely annoying. I started doing my camera comparison and I started taking pictures without even thinking about that. And
same here, yeah.
On the cover display, it's showing the full cover. I'm like, okay, so it's just, you know, cropped different for the cover. And 10 minutes later, I go and I've taken 20 photos that they're all cropped. And I'm like, oh, they're this square. Is stupid. Yeah. But yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, unless you know and dig into it, you're not going to know to change those settings and things to tweak. One other thing that for me is annoying is that the Motorola device, and this doesn't have to do with the cover display at all, but the Moto doesn't actually allow you to record video at 4K.
Change the camera.
And change the camera while recording video. You have to stop and start recording again between changing the lenses. Something that pretty much every flagship device for the last 2-3 maybe 4 years has allowed you to do. I don't know. It's definitely not a limitation of the
we should ask Moto.
It's definitely not a limitation of the SoC. I know a lot of times it is a limitation of that, because a lot of mid-range devices don't allow it, and they're using, you know, chipsets that don't allow that. They simply don't have the bandwidth to process that at the same time. But definitely not something you should be seeing from a $999 smartphone. It is incredibly annoying. If you're out there recording video and you want to switch on the fly, having to stop and start again is something I don't want to be doing.
Yeah, no, I hear you. You know, the thing for me about this is that the cameras, you know, like you look at the Z Flip 5 and it has that auto frame feature, right? Which dynamically switches between the ultra wide and the regular. And that works on the cover screen. It works if you use selfie camera. It works if you use it as a normal, like you're shooting someone else, like a group of people. Like the fact that, you know, that seems to be like a feature that only maybe Samsung and Apple have right now. I'm thinking about the iPads for video conferencing, but I'm sure that the iPhone has that feature for video recording as well. But I feel like that should be par for the course, right? And, you know, the other thing that's really interesting to me is I don't think it's the hardware, right? Like, because you look, okay, the Z Fold 5 is 12 megapixel f over 1.8 with 1.8 micron pixels, right? Phase detect, autofocus, and OIS. So in terms of, you know, it's not a high megapixel count, but the pixels are 1.8 microns. They're very large.
They're large,
get a pretty good aperture at 1.8. Now, conversely, on the other end of the spectrum, the Razer doesn't have quite as big pixels. They're 1.4, but it has an f over 1.5 lens. So that difference, I think, in pixel size is kind of like balanced out by the aperture, which is higher or bigger. So I think the hardware on both of these is solid. I think what we're seeing here, and you know, as you said, kudos to Moto, because actually, in my opinion, it was the Moto Edge Plus that really impressed me, like even more than the Razer in terms of image processing improvement for Moto. It's harder to do when you don't have the flagship chipset. But that's my point, right? The point I'm getting to here is that with Samsung, it's the 8th Gen 2 plus their imaging pipeline, which is much more polished than Moto's. Mm-hmm. So you get the double whammy, right? Like the nightography or whatever they call it, you know, the low light performance on the Z Flip 5 is so much better, in my opinion, than the light performance on the Razer. You know, at first glance, they're okay. But when you start looking at noise and areas, you're like, oh, wow. And I think that's 8th Gen 2 plus the image pipeline that Samsung has refined and fine-tuned for, you know, what, a decade now or more? And
yeah, so, I mean, if you look at comparison, the hardware between last year's Flip and this year's Flip 5,
it's the same.
It's the same hardware. And the only thing that's really changed is their imaging pipeline. They've probably improved that. They really didn't go into details what they've added this year, but also the processing allowed by the new Snapdragon chipset, which I think does make a huge difference.
Especially, in my opinion, in low light. And the other thing is where they both, in my opinion, fall apart. And like, I was like, oh my God, that's painful in 2023. And I think that's because they're using a low megapixel count sensor where you can't do the optimizations of cropping and dropping the pixel binning, for example, that you can do with the, you know, what's it, they call the like pseudo optical zoom 2X, right? Stuff like that is, you know, the fact that they're using these 12 megapixel sensors, the zooming is just disastrous, in my opinion. Anything over 3 to 4X.
They don't give it even as an option in the viewfinder. You have to pinch to zoom. There's no button for either device to go to 2X or anything like that.
No, there is if you tap on the Z Flip's 1 button or 0.5, you get a scale, and the scale is 0.5, 1, 2, 4, 8. You don't get 3X. You have to do that by hand. But the 4 is about where I would stop on the Z Flip. I think the Moto is a little worse because, again, this is all about algorithms and image processing, right? Like, I think, and my experiments, that the Z Flip 5 is doing some sign of super res zoom. It's attempting to. But with those big pixels, you're just not going to get anywhere. And the difference between that and the Fold are obviously significant because the Fold has a dedicated 3X telephoto. Even though it's only 10 megapixels, it really does help, right? And I think Samsung's doing sensor fusion, which Pixel's doing as well. So the center of, you know, an image that's zoomed is like using some of the big sensors data as well. So it's kind of interesting how they're doing that. The reality, though, is, you know, I'm actually a little disappointed with the Z Flip 5's imaging performance. I know what I was getting into because of those sensors. I knew that because they're being, you know, it's kind of like the Pixel that forever used that 12 megapixel OIS sensor, right? Like, you get to a point of diminishing returns, and I feel like this is the year, especially with Oppo doing the Find N2 Flip, that they should have flipped, pardon the pun, to a 48 or 50 megapixel sensor for the front camera, for the main, because I feel like we're seeing the limits of what that hardware can do finally. On the Fold, however, it's essentially a Galaxy S23 in terms of imaging performance. There is one thing to note. The ultra-wide has smaller pixels on the Fold than on the S23. So instead of 1.4 microns, it's 1.12 microns, but you get a slightly wider depth of field. That is the same sensor on the Fold, the ultra wide, as on the Flip. So they're also using an older sensor, but the 3X and the main are straight out of the S23. And guess what, Nick? ta-da, exactly the same imaging performance. Exactly. Yeah. You can put the S23 or S23 Plus side by side with the Fold and it's the same.
Yeah.
And no surprises. But here's the thing. Here's the killer. The Pixel Fold obliterates the Z Fold 5. Like, it's not even a contest.
Well,
like,
I mean, for photos, not for videos, yeah. though.
No, absolutely. Video, yeah. Samsung owns it, absolutely. But here's the thing. I was actually surprised at the difference. Like, I really thought, because, you know, I don't have experience with the previous Folds much from Samsung. I don't have experience with the lesser S series. I always have an Ultra on me, right? And the Ultra is, let's just make a pun. It's Ultra, okay? The S23 Ultra is just so good, right? So here's my take. After using the Pixel Fold that you're holding right now on video for the Patreons who are watching the video version, after using that, like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm willing to take and deal with the crappy Tensor chip because the camera on this phone, I mean, it's not quite as good as Pixel 7 Pro, but it's close. It's very, very close.
Yeah, I mean, the Pixel Fold does have its compromises compared to the regular Pixel lineup just because they were forced by sheer size of the device to use smaller sensors for...
Yeah, thinner, mostly.
Yeah, well, I mean, the sensors themselves simply can't have the same size because of the Z depth that's needed between the lens and the sensor itself. And yep. Google had to compromise there. But still, having a Periscope 5X camera on here is amazing. I don't care how good your 3X camera is. Even if this was a 3X Periscope camera in comparison to the Galaxy Z Fold 5, it would be significantly better because with the Periscope camera, you can fit a much larger sensor. If you actually look at the size of the sensor that's in the Pixel Fold versus the 3X sensor on the Fold 5 from Samsung, it's about double the size. I mean, that just... I don't care about megapixel count. I don't care about anything else. Double the size of the sensor means you're going to get a shallower depth of field and also significantly more light on each one of those pixels. I don't care if it's 10 megapixels. I don't care if it's 50 megapixels. It's going to make a significant difference. Sensor size is king typically in most situations. And doing the Periscope camera is the only way you can pull that off in a device of this size.
I mean, it's night and day. Like, I think the combination of SuperRes Zoom, the algorithms that Google has, that they've fine-tuned. You know, I'm really actually, as an aside, happy to see that Google is starting to use different sensors that are not like repeat sensors, like we've seen on the 7A, right?
Mm-hmm.
And on the Pixel Fold, like they're using sensors that they've never used before. And the results are still absolutely outstanding, which tells me a lot about how their pipeline isn't quite as married to a single or set of sensors as before. And to me, that's actually a huge improvement for Google. That means that they have a lot more freedom in what they do in developing into the future. So I didn't think it's going to be such a radical, like I knew it was going to be better, but it's so much better. I think I'm so used to the Galaxy S23 Ultra that when I used the Fold, I was like, oh, it's going to be good, right? Like, I mean, it's a Samsung. And then I was like, oh, no, no, no. The Pixel Fold is just a whole different league here.
Yeah,
like,
it's a different
even
ball
in
game.
Low light, like everything. And you're right, video is not, I'm talking about stills. But here's the thing. Here's what I think is really interesting is with a 10 megapixel sensor, right, on the telephoto, the folding lens on the Pixel Fold, and with, you know, the SuperRes Zoom and the Fusion algorithms that Google is using, we're getting up to 20x. I did some testing yesterday. 20x still works and still holds its own. The maximum zoom on the Pixel Fold still works fine. Enough that I would use it for social media. Maybe not for print, right? And so, like, to me, that's kind of amazing. Whereas, you know, the Fold goes up to like 30x and forget it. Anything over 10x is garbage.
I have to be honest here. I've only used them as much as doing my unboxing and a half a day from the hotel to the airport in Korea, because I was coming back from the Samsung launch event. From what I've seen in those 2.5 to 3 hours of sitting in a taxi and being at the airport. I was pretty impressed. I still have to take it all the way through the ringer, do my camera comparison still. But as you mentioned, it looks to be on par with the Galaxy S23 lineup, not the Ultra, of course. But I think that's a good thing. As far as, you know, other devices on the market right now, if you're comparing it to a lot of the Chinese foldable devices, I think this does come out ahead as far as the overall results. As far as the hardware goes, a lot of those other devices technically have better hardware in them.
Yeah.
They just have not been able to deliver on that hardware with great imaging pipelines to deliver better pictures as of yet.
Yeah.
I mean, they can roll out software updates that will definitely improve it. It's just they haven't gotten there yet.
And you know, they probably won't because they're moving on to the next phone. Like, I mean, no offense, right?
Like everybody is.
We're going to be talking about a couple of new upcoming book style folding phones in the news section here, but I'm actually really excited to see what OnePlus does here because of Oppo's expertise. The imaging pipeline at Oppo is really good, and the sensors, generally they don't skimp on the specs. At least they don't skip on the specs on the Oppo phones. So let's see what happens on the OnePlus, right? But you know, to wrap up the whole Samsung imaging thing, I am overall happy. I just feel like they really should have bumped the Flip up to a 50 megapixel, the same main sensor, and at least we could zoom with a little bit more freedom. Like, I'm not talking 10x, but I'm like, the 4x is crunchy right now. With a 50 megapixel sensor, I think the 4x would be reasonable, and that's kind of lacking. And they're kind of skimming through. They didn't have to, so they didn't do it. But next year, they better do it. Like, I mean, Oppo has shown us what you can do with a 50 megapixel sensor on a flip phone without OIS even. And, you know, even in low light with a Mary Silicon X and the, you know, Hasselblad color science, although I don't think that matters too much. It's really color science. But I think the processing on that Mary Silicon X has really made a difference on the Oppo Find and to flip, in my opinion. Yeah,
all these names, hard to keep them straight.
Oh man, impossible. Let's switch to the news. There's a bunch of stuff here. A lot of it is rumors. I've kind of ordered them in what I think is the most newsworthy first. We're going to do Apple, then Samsung, then OnePlus, then Xiaomi, then Honor, and then some other stuff. So this is a PSA. I'm sure you agree this is like very likely at this point that the date for the iPhone event looks like it's going to be September 13th.
Sounds like it.
So all I'm telling you is PSA, stay tuned for confirmation. But at this point, I think that's pretty much, you know, a done deal. What got me more interested is there's a ton of leaks. I'm kind of picking and choosing here. The leaks that the iPhone 15 non-pro and only the non-pro is going to get a stacked image sensor. That is really interesting to me. What's your take on that one?
That's interesting in the fact that they're thinking about it for the non-pro, which means they, two things. They either think that they have a pipeline for the imaging for the pro versions that's going to be a step up over last year, and the Pro has already been a significant leap over the regular iPhones, that they needed something to really kick the regular iPhones up a notch, or they have something in the pipeline for the Pro version next year that's going to be significantly better. I mean, at this point, they probably already know, like they're already talking to Sony or whoever they're going to be getting their next imaging sensors from in order to work that out. But I think for the regular iPhone 15, this should be a great improvement, because if you looked at any iPhones for the last 3 or 4 years, you had to get the Pro if you wanted even a decent camera. Like the regular version simply wasn't even part of the conversation. And I would say even behind of, you know, the regular Galaxy S23 or the regular S lineup, Apple's been lagging in that front, and, you know, they're making some monetary concessions there. You know, they don't want to spend the money in order to pay extra for a sensor that can actually deliver. And this time it looks like they're maybe going to be doing that, spending a little bit more to get some results.
Yeah, so the thing about stacked image sensors is that they take up less space because the transistor is below the pixel instead of being next to the pixel. And that means that, you know, apparently the Sony sensor that might be used here is a 1/1.43-inch, you know, form factor, like size, and it might perform as well as a 1-inch sensor. So that's kind of the benefit of this technology. So what I'm seeing, one of two things here, either we're going to get a slightly smaller sensor for better packaging for the iPhone 15 to give the equivalent performance of, you know, what you would get on the iPhone 15 Pro with a main sensor, right? Mm-hmm. Or they're going to give us, you know, a better, like, you know, they're going to keep the size the same and we're just going to get better low light and better everything else. And they're doing it to kind of test their pipeline on the 15 before they go to the Pro, because, and the Pro, you have to worry about sensor fusion with a telephoto and blah, 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 right? So I'm thinking, if this rumor is true, that we're going to be getting, you know, one of these two things. My gut is more on the smaller sensor to save Z space, to get a slightly thinner camera bump. That's my thought here, because they can probably still do better than last year with the new Bionic chip and whatever else, right?
Yeah, I mean, the bump has always been less pronounced on the regular devices as opposed to the Pro. I mean, the Pro is chunky when you consider that bump, and, you know, the metal frame around the camera bump as well. It's just something that you can't ignore. And I don't think they want that for the regular device. They want that sleeker profile. And as you said, you know, if you can make it so that you can have a smaller footprint for that sensor while retaining the same megapixels and, you know, overall same characteristics as before, why not, when you can improve depth of field and other features of the camera as well?
Yeah, the other thing to keep in mind is if your sensor is bigger, of course, your depth of field is nicer, but then you need a beefier image stabilization mechanism, whether using OIS or sensor shift, and there's more inertia to deal with, right? So if you're shaking the phone for video, like photos is fine because it just takes a few shots very quickly. But for video, it's continuously shooting. When you have to kind of balance electronic stabilization and optical stabilization, you get into what you see, that kind of weird jelly effect you see sometimes, especially in low light video from phones that have both OIS and EIS. It's because of the inertia. Like the sensor can't move as fast as it should because, you know, it's heavy comparatively because it's bigger in size. And of course, the benefits for photos are there, but for video, it's a detriment. So that's also why the Vivos have switched away from the gimbal, gone back to, you know, OIS, because it's a lot of weight to move around. And the more weight you have to move, it's not that you can't move the weight, it's that you can't move it as fast. So, you know, I'm
getting in the weeds here. If you make the gimbal or the OIS motors beefier and make
right.
the whole camera,
I mean, like,
you can. It just needs
it to fit
inside
in
a nice
phone,
package.
Nick.
Yeah, I know.
It has to fit in a phone.
Have you seen those Vivo phones? They got huge camera bumps on the back.
They
don't care about what it looks like.
So interestingly, the article that I'll link to about this iPhone 15 stacked image sensor mentions the Vivo X100 series, which should be also getting stacked image sensors from Sony. Moving on, though, again, imaging, Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra rumors, a little early for this. I mean, normally I wouldn't pay much attention to that at this early stage. But we're hearing that there's a 50 megapixel 3x telephoto instead of the 10 megapixel, which, well, would be an improvement. It would mean that you could kind of do some super res zoom in between. Like you could have 2x being like that cropped, you know, optical like, you know, zoom. Then you'd have 3x, then you'd have 6x, right? Cropped again. Like mm-hmm. you can do all this right now with the 10 megapixel, but you're having to do a lot of math and algorithms and you're losing data and it's not perfect.
Well, 10 megapixels, it just isn't a high number to start with in order to do that.
And there's sensor fusion, right? So this actually tells me that the 10x telephoto could be better because the 3x telephoto has a better sensor. You know what I'm saying? So the kind of benefits you get from using the main sensor and combining it with the 3X, you're now going to get by using the 3X sensor and combining it with the 10X. And I think that's kind of where they're going with this. I think what we're going to see is basically, especially in low light, up to about 6X or so, we're going to see extremely high quality. Whereas right now, anything above, like I'd say about 4X on the S23 Ultra, in low light struggles because, well, you got a 10 megapixel sensor, right?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, though, like there's so many iterations of this with, you know, the Galaxy S23 Ultra and, you know, maybe the 24 Ultra as well coming out, you know, 200 megapixel primary sensor. There's so many combinations with them being able to stack the images on top of each other, doing the pixel fusion and, you know, pixel binning on top of that. It's getting to the point where it just comes down to how imaginative the camera engineers can be when they're thinking about what can we actually do with this? Like, throw any idea at the wall and the processors inside of the phones are able to handle it. The question is, what's going to give you the better result? And at this point, I think it comes down to they need to do a lot of experimentation of maybe it's 200 megapixels for the primary and a 52 megapixel for, you know, a 3X or a 5X zoom. And then on top of that, we have the 10X zoom and a combination of all that. It'll take years to perfect, right? Like, we're still looking at these things. And I think we're getting to that experimentational standpoint right now where we're going to see Samsung just try a whole lot of things over the next years to get to the point where we can get like this seamless transition that makes it look like we have, you know, different, you know, focal lengths all the way in between. But then I started thinking, hasn't Sony solved this with their moving periscope camera that gives you, what is it, 3.3x to 6x? I forget the numbers there.
And you have five.
And you have a moving periscope camera that acts as a true zoom. Like, haven't we figured this out like with hardware already? So there's
the
both ends of the spectrum.
The f-stops aren't as good.
Aren't great, but I mean, but they allow for a much larger sensor than what this sensor is going to be because it is a periscope camera. So like the f-stops aren't good, but you have a larger sensor to start with. So you can have f-stops that are higher rather than, you know, what Samsung is giving you. So, I mean, there's a thousand trade-offs with each and every one. And I don't think there's a perfect solution to get to the right answer, but it's nice to see that we're getting the experimentation here.
Yeah, I'm actually more excited about what they can do for fusion here, fusing three sensors, you know, with progressively more data. So at 10X or 20X or 30X, you're going to start getting combined data from the 200 megapixel, the 50 and the 10. And at that point, you have basically more light to play with, right? So, and more interpolated data. So you can do subpixel interpolation to actually get smaller pixels, like what SuperRes Zoom does, right? Using the shake and the motion, the parallax of the two or three, in this case, sensors. Be seeing what happens. I'm just excited that Samsung's going all out here. Like, you know, Pixel says, look, we're just going to do, you know, ultra wide 1X, 5X. And with that, we can go to 20 or 30X without any problems. And they've shown that, right? Like, we know that's possible. And that's their solution. And they're throwing all the computational might to do that. Samsung's more like, let's see if we can add more sensors and more, you know, they're not afraid to throw more hardware into it to see what happens. And I kind of dig that. The price, obviously, is always an issue there because the
more
Ultras
hardware
are,
means more money.
They're expensive, but they're worth it usually. They haven't disappointed us in the past. So, except for the S20 Ultra. The S20 Ultra is still, you know, bad.
I mean, yes. But one thing I'd like to remind everybody, all these things that we're talking about, computational photography, the pixel binning, and all that, all of this stems from satellite telescopes in space that are taking pictures of far off galaxies. And this technology is 10, 15, 20 years old that, you know, NASA and other space agencies have been using to look at the stars. And it's making its way into our smartphones, which I think is one of the coolest things ever. Like, we have this space age technology that's just been packaged up into these tiny form factors that we carry around in our pockets all the time, just because, I don't know, I'm at my daughter's sports game and, you know, she's across the field and I want to zoom in and have a clear picture of her.
It's awesome. I think that's cool. Absolutely awesome. I just think that's cool. Love it. All right, let's move away from imaging a bit and talk about fast charging and OnePlus rumors. So the Ace 2 Pro is coming out on August 16th. That seems to be a fact because, well, OnePlus has released some information about the charging for this. Now, we don't get this phone in North America. This is, I think, a Asia/India phone. The Ace series has kind of always been like, I think, you know, actually India has the R series. It's the same as the Ace. What's interesting here to me is that this has a new SuperVOOC, which is called SuperVOOC S. And SuperVOOC, as you know, is the fast charging technology that Oppo and OnePlus use. And Realme, by the way, even though they call it something else. Vivo does use something different, though, because Vivo is the, you know, the little outlier in the BBK electronics universe.
And just to clarify, none of these companies actually own this technology. They license it from a third party that's all the same. So there is just different iterations of the same technology from a third party company.
Exactly. But what's interesting here to me is that this new S version of SuperVOOC is actually able to charge at 150 watt, a 5,000 milliamp hour battery in 17 minutes. That's pretty much expected. What's cool though is that the Brick also supports 45 watt PD. We've seen that before with OnePlus. But even cooler, this supports universal fast charging spec. And I don't know if you've heard of that. This is all the Chinese phone makers getting together and saying, hey, let's create a standard that's not PD specifically for fast charging phones. And to me, that's huge. Because that means that for the first time, if I really want to get that 240 watt or 150 watt charging speed, I'm going to be able to use a OnePlus brick to charge a Xiaomi phone, right? And in addition, I think the specs forces you to support PD up to 45 or 60 watt or something. So you can use that same brick to charge your MacBook or your ZenBook or your Surface from Microsoft. So that to me is why I put this story here, because I don't really care about the Ace 2 Pro that much. What do you think of all this?
This universal charging spec, the question is who's actually going to be supporting it. And from what I've gathered, it's the company behind these proprietary charging specs that's actually pushing it. So for those who don't know, Xiaomi uses it, Realme uses it. Infinix uses it. You know, all the BBK companies, a lot of these Chinese brands are using it. And I think they're simply trying to find a way around not having to license PD because, you know, PD is, you have to license it to use it, but so is this other spec. But I think this company is essentially trying to say, hey, we have much better technology than what PD delivers. And if we can create a universal standard for essentially their fast charging standard, which is significantly faster than PD, why not have Xiaomi phones, OnePlus phones, Oppo phones, you know, any of these devices actually be intercompatible rather than each one having, you know, a tiny chip that says, no, you can only work with this other device if it also has this tiny chip inside of it. And the questions then come down to, you know, do they have to have a proprietary chip inside of them? Because all these third-party ones do have this chip inside of the phone that makes it compatible with the cable and also the charger brick itself.
Yeah, the way I see this, this is a kind of like commonization of the communication algorithm between the phone and the charger, and, you know, kind of like a level of playing field in terms of the chips that they're using so that they can talk to each other, because the underlying tech is the same. But more importantly, PD is a universal starting format. Like, it, there, you know, you can use like your, you can charge your battery pack with it, you can charge your laptop, you can charge your headphones. That's the idea. What I think this charging standard is, it's more specifically about phone. It's about addressing specifics of battery packs in that certain range of 3,000 to 6,000 milliamp hour with dual cells, with a, you know, a voltage and current pump that's designed a specific way to save costs, to maximize safety. It's like PD doesn't really do that very well. PD is very universal.
PD doesn't do that at all. Yeah, I mean, so this is a standard for a specific type of build. And if you want to comply with this specific type of build, you would be able to apply the standard to it. Yeah. I think it's exciting. It's interesting. I don't think Samsung, Google, or Apple will ever adopt it. So, we're still left with universal standards that aren't universal. Remember when everyone cared about Qualcomm Quick Charge?
Oh my God, yes.
And how that was revolutionary back in the day. 18 watt charging. Oh my gosh.
Whoa.
I think it's still stuck at 18 watt charging.
Yeah. Look at it this way, Nick. The thing for us, tech savvy early adopters, media folks, the people listening here are tech savvy early adopters. They might have multiple phones. We're all looking forward to one brick that's PD45 to charge my MacBook Air. That's also, you know, able to charge my OnePlus or my Xiaomi phone at 150 watt. That is awesome. Even though my Pixel only charges at 25 watt, on PD.
So this just came to me though. This could be actually the push of the unnamed company that's making all of this, as they're getting pressure from the OEMs that are using their tech to start dropping chargers from the box. If they can come up with a universal charger that works for all of them that you can buy on Amazon, because right now, if you want a charger that does your OnePlus phone at the top speed, you have to buy the OnePlus charger.
OnePlus charger
at the top speed. Then that charger is not compatible with, an Oppo phone, and which is funny, and it's not compatible with a Xiaomi. But if they create this standard, and every one of those companies can start dropping chargers from the box and say, well, anyone can license this and it will work with this and you can buy it, for cheap on Amazon. That's what everyone else has been doing, right? Google doesn't give you a charger. Samsung doesn't give you a charger. Apple doesn't give you a charger. And all these companies are spending, it's not a lot, but it's an extra $3 to $5 to put a charger in the box. And then the shipping costs on top of that to, distribute these devices around the world, it does add up for these OEMs, and they're losing margin on it by doing that.
I think it's all a plot from Anker.
I don't know.
I blame Anker.
I mean, Anker is maybe the one behind all of it, and they're trying to get all our dollars.
Masterminds. It's Eric, the mastermind at Anker. Look, I love Anker, and I want to thank them for providing me with almost everything in my house that's PD. And, they've always been very supportive of the show, even though they've never sponsored the show. I just want to give them a kudos. I'm really joking when I say that they're going to be, it's not a conspiracy, folks. OnePlus Open. So this is weird, right? There's rumors that it's been delayed. Nobody's confirmed anything. And we talked about that last week on the show, but now we're seeing completely different renders of a phone that, instead of being like a Xiaomi, basically, or like an Honor folding phone where they're full screen in the front, like 6.7 inch, they look like a normal phone when shut. This is going back to the Passport form factor that we've seen on the Oppo Find N series. What do you make of this leak? This is renders that look kind of like a different version of the previous renders, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say how different it is from the previous renders, because I think and let's be clear, all of these renders are
hypothetical.
They're not real leaked renders. It's someone creating a render based off of information that they've gotten. Like they might have seen something and then they recreated it. So to say it's completely different from what we saw before could be, the artist's rendition of what he thought he saw and created, and then saw another photo and created it again. I don't know. I love seeing images like this because it allows me to visualize what a device is going to be.
Yeah.
But I never set my hopes on it gives me a ballpark, and I'm never going to say, oh, it was different and I don't like it anymore or anything like that, because the end result is definitely going to be different. No matter how detailed these renders can be, it is going to be different in some way, shape, or form. But personally, if it is getting shorter and stubbier, more a la Pixel Fold or the Find N 2, I like that form factor. I actually prefer that form factor over the taller Samsung Galaxy
Skinnier.
Fold form factor. It fits better in your pocket. It's a more pocketable device. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't like the Fold devices for so long. It's a much larger device than what I want to carry around with me. I've always gravitated towards the flips as opposed to the folds. But with the Pixel Fold, it is smaller. And with the larger, wider display on the outside, I can treat it more like a regular device rather than, oh, there's this skinny display that just doesn't feel right. I have to open my phone. We'll have to wait and see. I'm all for it if it is going to be shorter and stubbier. The question is, you know, if it is delayed, you know, why is it delayed? You know, did they go back?
I think it's supply chain. It's totally supply chain.
Well, is it supply chain or are they going back to the drawing board and saying, you know, maybe we thought it out wrong? I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I would love to see if there's prototypes of a taller device and what that actually looked like, because I'm sure there probably is somewhere in some room in Oppo's factory somewhere. But no, I'm all for it. I like the form factor. I do wish from these renders, it does look kind of thick. I wish it looked a little bit thinner. Because like Honor has been making their foldables extremely thin.
Yeah, but no wireless charging. So to me, I'd rather have like, you know, like this is not China. Yeah,
you get trade-offs. Like you do have the option for one and not the other. And you know, as much as I love wireless charging, I don't use it that often.
I know, but OnePlus can't mess this up. Like this has to be the mother of all OnePlus phones. This has to be everything but the kitchen sink. And the rumors are that's actually what it's going to be. Like there are other links I didn't put in the show notes here of people saying people at OnePlus saying, yeah, this is going to be it. This is going to have everything. So now is that China's version of everything or is that, you know, what we want in the West, the version of everything? That's the question, right? Speaking of China and book-style folding phone, the Xiaomi Mix Fold 3 is supposed to drop on August 14th. And to me, I'm actually waiting for that because that was the first of the really thin book-style folding phones before the Honor V2 stole, you know, the kind of like the top skinniest folding phone award. I liked that that one last year, the Fold 2 from Xiaomi. And so here we have some official photos from, you know, Xiaomi about the Fold 3. Does it look thinner than the V2 to you? It doesn't to me.
It's hard to say. The V2 was pretty thin anyways. It's hard to say. Wasn't at the time it was the thinnest foldable, right?
Oh, it was. Yeah. By quite a bit, yeah. And it's still only 2 millimeters thicker than the V2. Like, it's 11 versus 9 point something. Like, they're very close.
I mean, honestly, like, if you get to 10, like, I think you can call it a day. And that's why I was saying the Oppo looks really thick, because at that point, not the Oppo, the OnePlus, I mean, based off of if it's going to be similar to the Find N 2, you know, you're looking at, 14 to 16 millimeters, which is significant. But yeah, if you're around the 10 millimeter mark, I honestly don't care anymore. You're at the point where it's the size of a regular smartphone.
Yeah, to give you some perspective, if you're counting millimeters, Z Fold 5 is 13.4. The last year's Xiaomi Mix 2 Fold was 11.2, and the Honor Magic V2 is 9.9. So we're talking about 2 millimeters. Now, the difference between the Honor and the Fold 5 from Samsung is really noticeable. I don't know if the difference is going to be that noticeable between the Honor and the Xiaomi, but this is the old Xiaomi. So who knows what this one is going to be. The camera bump looks pretty mean, though. It does even look like it's Oppo style. Like it tapers a little bit before it plateaus up onto a camera island, and then the lenses themselves protrude, and yes, it does have Leica branding, so might this be the best camera in a folding phone yet?
Who knows?
The Pixel Fold is laughing over there.
Yeah, probably.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I mean, I do like the look of this, especially the gold variant. I wish, though, that they would have retained, I think the one last year, they had a couple lines on the back of the device, and kind of segmenting out the back panel a little bit. I really like that. It felt really good too. But I do like the fake leather option that they're showing. I think that'll give those people who like me want to feel the device be a little bit different and not have to walk around with a case on it all the time.
Yeah. So finally, foldable news, the IFA keynote for Honor is going to be on September 1st. We'll be there. And supposedly they're announcing two foldables. So obviously one of them is going to be the V2 global version, right? Like that's got to happen. Honor Magic V2 global. I can't wait to get my hands on that. But do you think they're going to show us a flip phone?
I don't know. I mean, there's been a couple stories that say there's two devices, but no one is showing any evidence of where they're getting this information from.
Right.
Based off of what we've seen, Honor's always essentially at IFA shown off what they announced in China.
In China,
couple months earlier. And, you know, what we just got recently in China, what was it, a month ago now? It's not even that. It was
it's not very long
July.
Ago.
My assumption is that's the only thing we're going to be seeing. Like, I don't think there should be a flip in the mix at all. But I don't know. They could surprise us, throw something out of left field. But I don't, based on what I've seen and what they've actually announced in China, I don't think they've been saving something just for IFA. It's, I don't know.
It seems unlikely, but I kind of want to think also that maybe they will do that because they've also announced phones that, you know, like MWC, there were not global phones. So maybe they're changing their game.
Yeah, but MWC is a larger, like based off of the chipset cycles and everything like that, MWC is the place to announce those. IFA doesn't seem, for Honor especially, IFA has been the place of, oh, we let's give everyone else what we gave China a couple months back. And they
or it's a teaser, or it's just a teaser, and they're going to tease us because they're waiting for Snapdragon 8 Gen 3 to drop.
That is an interesting proposition. I
because it's dropping
that.
Earlier this year. Why we know that? So what if
Snapdragon
Summit's
been
tease
moved up?
Us, and then we're going to get a China announcement right after the 8 Gen 3 of a flip phone from Oppo, and then it's going to launch in Europe like early January, February, whatever.
We'll have to wait and see.
We'll have to wait and see. Okay, this one's interesting. Nothing. This is like so playbook Calpe amazing. Nothing has a budget brand now called CMF. Stands for color, material, and finish. As you know, in the industry, that's what we talk about when we talk about the way a phone looks and is made. Mm-hmm. CMF. Brilliant name. There is a smartwatch and earbuds going through the Indian certification process right now for this brand. It looks like these are manufactured by a third party. They're basically like, you know, not in-house design or maybe design in-house, but manufactured definitely kind of like contract. So what's your take? Is it too early for Calpe to make
dilute the
a
brand?
Sub-brand?
It's hard to say. We'll have to wait and see what the products actually turn out to be. This does sound to me a little bit like what Xiaomi does. Because Xiaomi, if you look at Xiaomi makes 1,000 products, but Xiaomi actually doesn't make 1,000 products. And they have third-party contracted companies that meet
they
Xiaomi.
License their brand basically.
Well, but they go through a process of this product and the brand must meet certain requirements in order to call itself a Xiaomi product. And so that's, and from what I've seen in all the products that are under the Xiaomi umbrella, they have high quality. The designs are typically in somewhat line with what the Xiaomi overall design is. There's still a cohesiveness to the brand. If they found a third party company that says, hey, we have an idea for a product that matches up with what you guys are doing from a design perspective, and I think we can meet the quality of what people expect from your brand. I don't know, like, more power to them, you know, like, everybody wants more from everybody all the time, right? It's not like we're like, nah, we only want 3 nothing products and call it a day. Like, so far, most people like the Nothing brand. They love the build quality of what they've been able to achieve and the design that's different from most everything else that's on the market right now. If it turns out good, great, but it, you know, it has to turn out good because or else it's the downturn really quick, right?
Yep. 100%. A couple of last items to wrap things up here. We have this interesting pair of earbuds from Red Magic. I know these came out a couple of weeks ago and I kind of forgot about them, but you know, I like me a Red Magic phone, despite some of their flaws, they're pretty interesting. And since we're talking about Nothing and they make transparent earbuds, or translucent. Well, guess what? It looks like Red Magic did the same thing. They have a pair of ANC earbuds that look pretty high quality and have really cool translucent design with RGB lighting, because of course they do. Cyberbuds DAO TWS. I don't think the TWS is necessary since we know they're true wireless. But what's interesting is the dock too. It's kind of weird. It's like a dock / charging case. It's both. I think you can use it with your PC through the dock. I don't know. Low latency. I think it has 28 milliseconds latency, which is really low.
Yeah. So, yeah, the dock has this like pass-through metal bar that goes through the case of the earbuds to hold it in place. Like, it's just, I want to get my hands on these to test them
out. I've asked for a review in it because I'm kind of intrigued. Like, I'm sure there's going to be another pair of decent ANC earbuds from China with some cool RGB lights and, you know, crazy, just for the unboxing alone, it'll be worth it, basically.
Right. Yeah, interesting. We'll have to see. I'll be sending my contact and email on these for sure.
Yeah, they said so far that they're not going to be available to us yet, but soon. So let's keep bugging them about it. This one's good. Google Messages is about to gain or has already gained MLS support. MLS is a standard that lets, it's called Messaging Layer Security, and it basically lets different messaging app, like WhatsApp, for example, could talk to Telegram, that could talk to Signal, that could talk to your text messages, and it still all would be encrypted. So let's take a deep breath together here, because messaging has been broken forever, but I'm very much looking forward to a universal standard for messaging that's encrypted. Maybe I'm being too optimistic. Thoughts?
I hadn't approached it from that thought standpoint when I read through this originally, but I do like that idea. I think those of us who have been on the internet for a while can remember when we had universal messaging systems that talk to each other.
It was so good.
Messaging protocols. You could have a single app with 5 different messaging protocols in it. It's a nice dream to have. I don't know. I mean, so from Google's perspective, I think they would be 100% for having a universal platform, because it just makes everything more simple with less boundaries and barriers for people to go through. The question is, can it actually be implemented in this day and age? That's a whole nother thing. But as far as adding more security to Google Messages, I think this is a good thing. Adding encryption, end-to-end encryption, no matter what you are sending, is a positive. Apple's been beating this dead horse for a long time about how their system is so secure, even though it really hasn't been proven that it's any more secure than any of these other encrypted messaging systems are, especially because things get backed up to the Apple cloud and then things can get shared that way. So it's not really that secure if you have a backup of it that can be easily sent out on another platform. So,
well, the backups on Apple are encrypted, and so that at least helps a little bit.
Yeah, but they can still be manipulated. Either way.
Yeah, for sure.
It's one of those things. Security is good on all fronts. I do like that Google's continuing to evolve Google Messaging further than just RCS and the RCS standard, I think this is a good thing for everybody who's using the app.
Yeah, and I think that if, like, say, Meta decides, like they did decide to support the Mastodon distributed, you know, standard, like if they, say, jumped in and said, we're going to do MLS, it might mean that eventually we can have, you know, Facebook Messenger talk to text messaging, for example, or whatever, right? And so, more importantly, the thing here about MLS that's really cool is encrypted group messaging, which we don't have on RCS right now, right? Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is what got me excited, plus the
interoperability.
Thank you. Awesome. There you go. All right, well, let's wrap it up. Nick, do you want to tell folks where they can find you on the internet, all your various social media handles? What platforms are you on, and where do you publish your stuff?
You can find me and my team on fandroid.com, or else I am on youtube.com/fandroid, or social media, TikTok and Instagram at fandroids with an S. Or personally, I'm on Twitter. You can find me, or sorry, not Twitter. I'm on X. It just sounds cooler. I'm on X and or Threads at Nick M. Gray.
There you go, folks. So subscribe, follow, all that good stuff. Nick and his team put together some really delightful content, so check it out. And you know where to find me, folks. I'm at Tankerl on pretty much everything. That's T-N-K-G-R-L, like the comic book character Drop the Vowels. I'm on Twitter/X. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Threads. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm also on Mastodon, but I don't use it, so don't bother. I think that's it for social media. There's LinkedIn, I guess. Anyway, find me there. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, mobiletechpodcast.com is URL. We're on all the major platforms, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, everywhere good podcasts can be found. So please subscribe and tell your friends. And if your app lets you rate or review the show, please consider doing that. There's a YouTube channel you can subscribe to as well. I've got some hands-ons and unboxings from time to time. The most recent being my Z Flip 5 and Z Fold 5 hands-on from Korea. So check that out. youtube.com/mobiletechpodcast. You know how YouTube works, right? So go ahead and like, subscribe, click the little bell, and comment below the video. Let me know what your thoughts are on those various videos. And finally, there's a Patreon, patreon.com/tankgirl. That's patreon.com/tnkgrl. Right now you can get a bunch of perks there. There's a way to join the Discord server. There's also a video version of the podcast. It comes out a couple of days before the audio version and has bloopers and fun stuff in it. And we show phones like Nick did earlier and stuff like that. So consider helping me out by getting a little extra content. I'd appreciate it. And if you don't want to help with Patreon, that's cool. There is a way to help by clicking on a link in the show notes that brings you to a PayPal button, and then you can make a donation and buy me another cup of coffee or lunch or whatever. I'd appreciate you helping me out if you can. And I do want to thank our sponsor, Mint Mobile. You know, I review a lot of phones, so I'm constantly juggling multiple devices. While that's fun, it also means I'm spending a lot of money for wireless service on multiple SIMs. Thankfully, there's Mint Mobile, and that's who I'm teaming up with for today's podcast. If you want to save money on your wireless service, switch to Mint Mobile. You've probably seen the Mint Mobile ads featuring Ryan Reynolds, but let me quickly tell you how fantastic their service is, especially for tech-savvy early adopters like us. Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for as low as $15 a month, and you don't have to sacrifice any coverage, speed, or data. They're built on the nation's largest 5G network. They keep costs low because they sell direct to you online. They cut out the retail stores and salespeople. Why should you pay more than you have to for access to the same network? In my experience testing phones, Mint Mobile delivers the same data speeds and call quality as the big three for a fraction of the cost. Switching to Mint is super easy. Thanks to their eSIMs, you can sign up and activate immediately right on your phone from the comfort of your home. No more standing around waiting in line at a big wireless store. You can keep your current devices and phone number and easily switch services. And if your phone isn't eSIM compatible, Mint will ship you a new SIM card free of charge. The whole process only takes 15 minutes, and if you get stuck, Mint has a great customer service team to get you through it. All Mint Mobile plans include unlimited nationwide talk and text, plus lightning-fast 5G and free mobile hotspot. Mint will show you how much data you use each month and recommend plans that save you money. Mint also offers a modern family plan that lets you set up a super affordable family plan with as little as two lines. Use my link, mintmobile.com/mobiletech, to get premium wireless starting at $15 a month. Stop paying more than you need on your wireless bill and start saving big with Mint Mobile. And of course, I want to thank you, Nick, for being my guest yet again on the show. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to do it outside of a trade show.
I know, it's a little less rushed and hectic, and also it's going to sound and look better. So kudos to that. I'll have you on the show again in the future. And folks, we'll have another show next week. So stay tuned for that. Until then, cheers, everybody.
This has been the Mobile Tech Podcast with Tank Girl, proudly presented by worldpodcasts.com. You can visit us online at mobiletechpodcast.com.